Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, January 7th, 2015. It's our first Weekly Manga Recap of the new year. Chris, how you doing?
I'd be a lot better if Skype worked.
Yeah, we have delayed the episode for approximately 30 minutes trying to get the new shit version of Skype to work properly with our recording programs, and we end up exploiting option D, I think it was. In order to try to get it to work.
I have three different recording programs. None of them are working right now, so I have to just go with fucking recording off of OBS.
You couldn't manage to get an older version of Skype, which you know works with the stuff, and yeah. So, here we are.
Apparently Skype became, like, very protective of its old versions, and just started deleting them from the internet. Like, I imagine, like, Skype's kind of like, I don't know, like, you know, like, those kids who turned out, like, they were, like, really emo goth kids, and they were on, like, image boards when they were younger, and then when they get older, they're like, no one can find out what I was like, and they just try to wipe all that shit off the internet. I imagine that's what Skype was like. But instead of badly written fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan fiction, they were like, I don't want these...
How do you know about that?
I don't want these proper fucking good working versions of Skype out there for somebody to find.
No, we have to have the gaudy versions with all the buttons that have icons instead of actual words on them, so you can't tell what the fuck they're supposed to do. This eye-bleeding format, and all the stuff that people use in conjunction with it works, and God.
We have to find anything better than Skype, holy shit.
I know there's Google Hangouts, but...
I did not have good luck with that before either. That's a weird system.
And people are like, oh, you'll use this, we've tried. There needs to be something that works as well as Skype used to work, basically. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Okay.
Or I'll just fly down to Florida every week to record the podcast. That's another option.
Honestly, I think that it would pay off if we happened to live in the same area for us to just do it in person. We would avoid so much hassle, and honestly, it would sound better, but, you know, whatever. Perfect world, etc. Let's just move on to what we're actually here to talk about. I know that we basically said that we would be covering Real this week, but we're holding off on that until next week. So basically we learned that, yes, there was going to be another week with no manga. And so we're doing what we did the last time, which is doing nothing on the week where there is manga and then covering it in the week that there is no manga. But shut up.
I don't know, I guess I misremembered when they usually took their breaks, or I don't know what's wrong with it, but yeah, we're off on that again.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do our annual manga recap. This will be our fourth time doing this. We've done, like, the podcast for about 3.5 years now. And then we're going to basically go over the series that we normally cover, and we're going to say where the series was, like, a year ago, and talk about how we feel the series performed over the course of the year of us covering it, and then cover the newest chapter. So, and then after all that's done, we will get into the series that wrapped up.
Yes.
I believe that that's what we planned
on. Yeah, I imagine we'll just save, like, you know, your All You Need Is Kill and all that, and all the Jumpstart series until the end. After we've finished our regular series, it would flow probably pretty well.
Then we've got we've got the contest stuff to go over, right?
Yeah, it'll be at the end. We'll announce who is going to get some copies of World Trigger for free. And, well, it's a good fun. Well, I like these recaps. I'm just trying to get into the mood off of Skype. It's good to
have,
man.
We're going to take a little bit, but that's okay. We've got a fair number of series that we're going to need to go over, though not as many as in previous years, because this year we basically finally decided, okay, we can't just expect to cover a new series every week, and then the week of when we're supposed to cover it, we'll have to tell people, oh no, we need more time to read it. No, we'll just set aside more time in order to cover newer series. And so we covered 26 different series over the course of the year, or at least 26 series in terms of stuff that we actually set aside an episode to talk about. Mm-hmm. There are some, of course, that we picked up, you know, stuff like Gyakuhote and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, 26 new series. 25, I guess, if you want to put an asterisk next to Fairy Tail. But Fairy Tail is considered a manga recommendation for this year, so.
It was a recommendation, though. It counts.
Yeah. And, you know, some people noted, we had people who entered in, they put their thoughts of the last year of manga and WMR in there, and a lot of people were like, you know, we actually like that you guys did less because it meant that you guys were more, you know, knowledgeable in the series. You were able to recap, so it made for better analysis and better episodes. So even though I think we did less series, I think we still had, you know, good episodes because of it.
Yeah, I like the way that stuff turned out.
Yeah. Although I will admit, we did not get many good manga this year.
We also didn't get many horrible manga, I don't think. We had a lot of very... I know that some people actually took note of this in their own, analyses of our year, that a lot of people said, yeah, you guys had a lot of mediocre stuff. And at the end, once we get through all 26 of these, just kind of going over them briefly, we're going to each have three favorites and least favorites, and kind of slimmer pickings this year. There's a lot of stuff in the middle and not a whole lot on either extreme, I don't think.
I found enough to fill my bottom three pretty easily, I thought.
Okay.
I didn't struggle too much on those three.
Okay, but let's go through this just chronologically. We started off, our first suggestion was Black Lagoon, the rather infamous kind of crime series with gun-toting, jorts-wearing Revy and...
Starring Revy, Revy's butt, Rock, and the other two, Benny, and... I was trying to recall this...
The other two who are supposed to be main characters, but...
Never do anything. I was actually trying to recall this, like, going through the series. I was like, there was Benny... I mean, Revy and Rock, obviously, and then there was Benny. I was like, what the fuck was the other guy's name? Like,
was it the twins? No.
No.
Was it the maid girl who was in love with her young master? No. Was it the Russian mafia boss? No.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was the black guy too, Black Vin Diesel. I just can't remember his fucking name.
Vin Diesel is black.
Well,
he's that black.
Much blacker Vin Diesel then, I guess. Dutch, that was it. Dutch is his name. I couldn't remember the fourth man of the four-man team. I actually did like Black Lagoon to a certain extent, but I remember having problems with the way it ended its arcs and the fact that they kind of went on a little too long. And the fact that, yeah, it was a four-man team and two of them did nothing.
Right. Then we did Yatsubato, which when I took the suggestion, I warned people, if this ends with like, father-daughter incest, I'm going to kill you all. But it didn't, so it's fine.
Yes. Do you feel better now, Nick?
Yes.
You've read a series with a father who adopts a little girl, and he doesn't end up banging her at the end.
Yeah, it was probably the most effective of all of the, cutesy raising a young girl series that we've gone through. And it also had some legitimately funny moments, too, so, yeah. I mean, it's hard to talk about because it's just like, you know, a collection of little short stories, like a different story every chapter. Not a lot of tremendously memorable moments, I don't think.
It would be like recapping Rugrats.
Yeah. Although I never watched Rugrats, so...
What the fuck? How'd you not watch Rugrats?
I wasn't a Nickelodeon kid. I watched Cartoon Network all the time.
But...
Like, exclusively.
But there was, like, a 5-year span before the Cartoon Network even had anything good on. Nickelodeon was just knocking it out of the park.
I watched the old shit that they had before the cartoon started up.
You are insane!
I grew up on Two Stupid Dogs and Speed Racer, man.
Oh my god, I feel so bad for you.
Oh, let's see, I also watched, like, Saturday morning cartoons, like, on Fox Kids and Kids WB. But yeah, weekdays, it was always Cartoon Network. That was it.
I mean,
also,
I guess you...
Also, Power Rangers were on. I watched that, too.
I guess you avoided Doug, but I'm just like, how...
Yeah, I never watched Doug, like, ever.
Well, that's good. Doug sucked. It always sucked. But Rugrats, man, All right, fair enough. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Baffled. I'm a little...
Treasures of the 90s or something.
Like, you can't see it, but my hair is blown back. Like, it's just like a bomb just went off in front of my face. What?
Nick never watched Rugrats?
How did you not watch Rugrats? Well, you were born in the late 80s, early 90s.
I couldn't avoid it because it was on for literally 10 years. So I was bound to see some of it at some point, but I never, like, deliberately watched it.
That's fair enough. Yeah. I'm coming to like a level state now, so I'm like, all right, that's okay. Fair enough.
At first, I was like, oh, but then I was after hearing him say it the same thing four times, I was like, yeah, okay.
All right, Nick, do monsters need to sleep?
What?
Do monsters need to sleep? Like, do you have to go to bed at night, or do you just feed off of your fucking my molested childhood.
Okay. It took me a second, like, is he making a Rugrats reference?
Yeah, I'm making a scare Rugrats reference for you to not get while we're talking.
That would be something that you should have actually done. What the fuck are you talking about? And then you would have said some really stupid, like, mispronunciation of words, which makes no sense because the baby shouldn't understand any English. Because what fucking sense does that make? And how did Angelica speak baby language and adult language? That makes no sense. Your cartoon is built on lies.
Anyway. So, what did we talk about? I can't even remember the pod. Oh, we were Yatsubato. Oh, holy shit, we're at 2 out of 26.
Then there was Hunter Hunter, which we had Nick Canosa on to talk about with us. Mm-hmm. And I made both of you very upset with how little I liked the series.
I mean, look, I wasn't crazy on Hunter Hunter either. I still enjoyed Hunter Hunter. I can see why people liked it. But I admit that there were very large problems to the series. You know, Happy Nick obviously admitted it was as well, as he agreed with a lot of our points. I liked that episode a lot, actually, because we didn't get to many
discussion on it.
We had a very good discussion on it. You know, a lot of people in their recaps of 2014 even mentioned, like, I was kind of worried about this episode because you had, you know, Happy Nick on. He mentioned it was his favorite series. We didn't want you guys to pull punches. The fact that you guys, said all you did, but you didn't, like, just shit all over him for also liking it, you know, it's very cool. So, I like that. And, people also know that this is the only, recommendation episode this year we had a guest for.
Yeah, I would like to, do some more stuff with guests, I think, in the future, but that's something to think about later, I believe.
But yeah, I still enjoy Hunter Hunter, though. It's almost like it was a fucking, like, a Andy Kaufman-esque gag where they brought Hunter Hunter back later that year just for it to go on hiatus in like
within a month.
2 weeks after nothing happened. There was some 10-breasted monster and then fucking gone.
Oh, I love some of the jokes that made around that time. We're just like, oh, Sailor Moon Crystal came out and then they're re-releasing the old one too, so that his wife just went home and like slept on their and banged on their pile of money.
He's just like, oh, I can stop writing again? Sweet.
Gonna go play the whatever game, Dragon Quest, I think. Then after that was probably our weirdest recommendation of the year, which was Crimsons. One of two heavily fish-related manga that we read this year. Although this one was probably somehow the weirder, and also the one that we enjoyed more.
That's a very arguable stance.
It definitely is, but it was a straight shonen manga about salmon migrating.
Yeah, but there's also like the moments where it fucking like there's fish orgies, and then it like cuts to realistic fish orgies. But at the same time, Gio had a fat woman farting around on a ceiling fan. That's a tough one. I think I'd have to think on which one was weirder between the two of those.
I think that I find the premise of Crimsons to be the more bizarre, because I would not associate a fish-related manga to be this shonen action-style thing, and I would find it more likely to have a horror story that featured fish.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah.
But we both really liked Crimsons, mostly because of how completely absurd it was.
It was ridiculous. Gloriously ridiculous.
Then we had Teppu, which was the MMA manga about the young girl Natsuo, who got into MMA, and so many awesome fights. Not a whole lot of it, because it's still very short. Mm-hmm. Very sad that it's so short. Then we did Freezing.
Now, alright, so when we read a series for Jump, I take notes on it, and I keep all my notes in a OneNote. I don't know if you know the OneNote program from Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But it's like a freeform note-taking tool.
I don't use
tool.
It, but yeah, I know.
I have it at work, and because I read a lot during my breaks and stuff like that, and it's also, you know, a place to put my thoughts, all my notes are at work, generally, and I just, you know, print them out and take them home. For most, you know, manga we read, I cover about, like, one, you know, half of the page with notes, and it's usually just, like, general impressions, thoughts, things like that, character names. When I, like, because I've been clicking through and, like, kind of rereading my thoughts on the series I had, it was astonishing for me to go from Crimson's, where I was just like, huh, this is a weird series. From Teppu, sorry. I was just like, oh, Teppu, this is a very interesting series. Wow, she's got some depth. Huh, this is pretty cool. The art's not that great, though. And then I went to Freezing. I had the entire page, and then, like, pages beneath that, full of notes and all these listings of different events that fucking infuriated me to no end. I was baffled at how angry that series made me when I remembered it again. I was like, good God.
Well, yeah, and then the incest rape storyline that ends in her just forgiving him after he's tried to kill them.
Oh, it is a horrible series. It's horrible on so many levels. The fact that it has a main character with this, you know, deeply sexual, sexually abused backstory, but then continues to use her as a fan service fetish character is just so wrong.
It's like shitting on your cake and eating it too.
It is absolutely the case of trying to have your cake and eat it too. Like, you can't have both of those, dude.
Oh. And then we did Fruits Basket.
Mm-hmm.
No rape in that one. no brother sister.
Well, I was gonna say, I was like, that
no
brother
sister rape with the one forgiving the other for no reason.
if Fruits Basket was good, I'm trying to think if there were many other shoujo we read this year.
Was Girlfriends shoujo?
Well, it was Yuri. I mean, I get technically shoujo, but I don't know if it's sort of a.
We did Kamikaze Kaito-jan.
That was like Magical Girl. It was a little bit different. It wasn't like straight romance, really.
Well, Fruits Basket is not just romance either.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, I liked Fruits Basket.
Was good. then we did Hikaru no Go, which was the, well, Go manga. And we both quite enjoyed parts of that, but I think that we agreed that it was impossible to understand what was going on.
Yeah, it's two thoughts on this. One person in their recap of the year were like, oh man, you guys hated that series. I was like, I thought we liked Hikaru no Go. Like, I had to stop and like recall. I was like, did I shit all over it? Maybe we were just negative in our, you know, episode of it, but we still enjoyed it or something like that. But I had one of my friends over recently during the holidays, and he had read Hikaru no Go, and we had brought it up. And the one thing I mentioned, I was just like, yeah, it'd be really hard to play that series, you know, play Go after learning, you know, from reading Hikaru no Go. Like, it just doesn't teach you. And he's like, no, I think I got the basics. Then I was like, did you fucking read a series I didn't? How the fuck did you know how to play Go? They never tell you.
It was like, you're supposed to surround the pieces and stuff, and then they just like talking about things that they're doing without showing the board and the pieces they're putting down.
I still do like Hikaru no Go, but good God, like, for a series about Go.
Probably because they portrayed, like, a whole game, it would take, like, 50 chapters.
Yes. It would be ridiculous. But it's weird, like, you know, I've read what was probably, like, a 7-long-year series of Go, and I had no fucking clue how to play it. But I am also the reigning WR Marco champion.
After one game, after which we were both like, okay, that's enough.
And in which you were technically winning at the time you gave up.
Yeah, I just quit, even though I had the better score. I think it was like I concluded that there was no way I could win because like if we kept on going, then you would eventually overtake me.
Yeah.
But yeah. Then there was Karakuri Circus, which was about using the mechanical puppets, and there was all sorts of battles in that one. And guy getting his arm ripped off, if I recall correctly. Something along those lines.
It was an interesting series in that it was kind of separated into three parts, and mm-hmm. like the first part built up this idea of who the protagonist was, and then at the end of it, they kill him off, and it's suddenly the kid who's the protagonist. And that was sort of an interesting change, because they took the kid who's usually like that annoying tag-along, and they actually made him like the weird badass. Like, that kid fucking gets some balls fucking fast. But I mean, outside of that, this is one of the more forgettable series for me this year. Like, trying to recall specific instances of the series, I didn't get too many pulls from it. And this was sort of at that mid part of the year where I think we caught a lot of those series that didn't leave too strong of an impression.
Oh yeah, there's a whole ton that come like in a row where it's just like, what was that? Ah, jeez.
Yeah.
Like, I much more vividly remember like the early parts of the year, like from Black Lagoon all the way up until basically Hikaru no Go. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that one. And then from here until up until Spider-Man, there's like nothing except for Fairy Tail. And Fairy Tail was something we were both already familiar with anyway.
Yeah.
It must have been like a stretch of about 3 months where we were just, where almost nothing is memorable, which is kind of unfortunate. After that was Kamikaze Kaito Jean.
This is the one I remember nothing of.
It was a magical girl series in which the main character was like a phantom thief who threw pens into paintings in order to purify them. And then at the end, it turned out that one of them was an agent of the devil and the other an agent of God. And there were fairies that were also angels that had been like banished from heaven. And yeah, it was weird. Another example of a girl just randomly forgiving a guy who tried to rape her.
It's weird that like once a year in Weekly Manga Recap, one of the recommendations we do, I just completely fucking forget we ever did that series. Like, I was going through recently to get the series on iTunes, and I came across Watashi na Shinichi, about the girl who like trying to become a cell phone novelist. And she's trying to become like a cell phone novelist or whatever. And I was like, holy shit, I forgot we did that series.
That's the one where she's like trying to get like romantic experience with a guy, right?
She has like a really good series, but doesn't have love in it. So she has to write love, but she doesn't know about love. So it's like,
blackmails a guy into having a fake relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, falls in love, obviously. But like when I was looking through the recap for this year, I was like, what the fuck was Kamikaze Kaito Jean? Why can I remember nothing about it except the premise?
Then we did Girlfriends, which was about lesbians. Well, it was.
It was about love. Lesbian love.
Yes, lesbian love, yes.
It's a good one. I just remember...
I believe it was sweet, but honestly, I think that left less of an impression on me than Jean did, so...
Yeah, I remember it being a cute series and very innocent, you know, and a good series to read. But yeah, it didn't leave too much of an impression after it was done.
I believe that it had a lot of the standard frustrating shoujo romance tropes in it anyway. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, like one person being in love and the other one just being like, what? What are you talking about? Burp, 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 I can't tell them. Burp, da, 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 what's going on? Anyway. Then we did Fairy Tail, which was basically me just catching up to you, and then we talked for like an hour and a half about the series.
Are you happy to be...
a lot to talk about.
Are you happy to be caught up now, Nick?
Yes.
I'm excited to get to Fairy Tail in our 2014 recap. I'm very excited, because not only was Fairy Tail interesting this year, where it started this year was interesting, and the chapter we got most recently was fucking phenomenal.
It was... It's weird because, like, I don't actually remember where the series was at, because whenever you would talk about Fairy Tail on your own, I would just kind of be like, I would, like, two times out of three, I would immediately forget what you talked about afterward. I'll always remember is when you talk about Apocalypse Dragon just killing everyone after they hold hands because you were so excited about it.
I was so pumped. It was like a giddy schoolgirl that day.
After Fairy Tail, we did Sun Ken Rock, which was that weird series about a guy becoming an unwilling mafia boss. That was weird.
The one thing I'll remember from it is he literally defeats one person by fingering her into submission.
Yeah, and then there were all those girls. Like, he ends up becoming, like, the manager of an all-girl pop group, and he has to keep on resisting the temptation to bang all of them.
It was such a weird series with its just absurd fan service, but it was weird because we got a lot of series this year with fan service centric moments, and this is one of the few that I was like, I'm okay with the fan service in this because I feel like it's so ridiculous. I'm not like baffled by it. It's almost just amusing.
Mm-hmm. Then we had Bagataway, which was kind of pitched to us because it was another, you know, girls' lacrosse manga. I honestly don't remember it very much. I remember it being similar in a lot of ways to Cross Manage, but us not liking it as much because the characters weren't as interesting, basically. Oh, and also the main character was just fucking like, oh, she just immediately understands this. Do, 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 do.
Yeah, I didn't care much for Brigada Way. I mean, it taught me about lacrosse a bit more than Cross Managed did, but it had none of the drama or characterization or any of that.
Then there was Spider-Man, which...
Nick yeah. loved.
Yeah. And then there was Prison School, which...
which I loved.
Then there was Bambino, which was... I love the conversation we had about that, because, like, it's just about food, but then, like, he goes to New York, and everyone's a racist in 9/11, and they have a competition against Sicilian twins who try to kill them, and at the end, the love interest boyfriend just gets hit by a car and dies.
It's such a grounded series for so long until that last arc, and then everything gets ridiculous at once.
I've actually kept up with the Segundo series that's come out, and it's just like he keeps on, Bambi keeps on having this like these run-ins with this one guy who's just an asshole to him, and he can't cook because his sense of taste is awful. So they have a cooking competition, and oh, he rigged the voting box so that he won, and somehow no one realizes. Wait a minute, I didn't vote for him. How the fuck did he win?
Nobody ever talked to each other. Like, hey man, why didn't you vote for that guy?
It's like two weeks before some people are like, yeah, I kind of liked his better. Yeah, I liked his better too. Yeah, I liked his better. Who the fuck voted for that guy? Oh, God. It's just like, God, you're the boss now. Grow a goddamn backbone, you stupid kid. Then we did Halloween Month, which featured a whole ton of Junji Ito series. But first we did Higurashi, no Naku Koro ni, which... was a frustrating experience because there's so many different series that are the same series. Ugh. Also, I really didn't like it. So,
yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, that was not the long-awaited review I think a lot of people were hoping for.
Then we did Tomie, which was probably the best of the three Ito series.
Absolutely. Tomie, to this day, still, even after the two Ito series, I'd still say Tomie is actually a really well-done horror series.
Mm-hmm. Then there was Cradle of Monsters, which was Poseidon Adventure with rage zombie virus and pissing and hanging and... yeah. That was weird.
That was my thoughts on Cradle of Monsters.
Then we did Gyo, which was fucking hilarious, because it was fish on mechanical legs going around, and somehow the machines were an act of nature, and farting, and so weird. Then there was Uzumaki, which was flawed, shall we say.
It was a bit of a strange one.
At least it wasn't farting fish machines, though.
No, but there were, like, tornado-riding guys and people turning into snails. It was such a weird series.
Then we did Opart Center, also known as 666 Satan, as part of Naruto Month. Mm-hmm. And we were both okay on it, I think.
Yeah, it didn't blow my mind, but I certainly saw aspects in it that I could enjoy.
Then we did our, I guess, really big fighty action series of the year, which was Kingdom, but we both kind of acknowledged this was just good because lots and lots and lots of fighting, and that's about it.
Yeah, it had tremendous action scenes that are still, you know, one of the most, like, adrenaline-pumping kind of experiences I think you can get in manga right now.
Then we did Rock Lee's Springtime of Youth, the Naruto side series that focuses on Rock Lee that we both liked, but we're like, oh my god, Rock Lee's kind of a dick, and these jokes got tired after a while. Maybe we shouldn't have read this all at once.
It still worked, though, and it was nice to kind of get a comedy in at the end of the year. Mm-hmm.
Then Boku no Hero Academia was the last actual suggestion that we took, and we both really liked that one.
So, yes, it was a good one.
So, I guess we'll do our favorites and least favorites. You got a preference in how we do this?
Do you want to go with least favorites first or favorites first?
Let's get the bad stuff out of the way first.
All right. My bottom three, and this isn't in any particular order, but one of them shouldn't be surprising. It was Freezing. Actually, that was probably number one. Let's just say that's number one. I'll rank them for this case.
That was a backup option of mine. I knew you would name it, so... I just have it as a backup here.
All right, so the other two are Geo and Prison School.
Put Prison School too.
those are my three. And the reason that I say Frieza is worse than those other ones is just because of how horribly offensive it becomes when you read into it. I mean, it's a bad series in and of itself because it has so many terrible elements. It had that worthless harem subplot, which didn't make any sense because the main character fucking acknowledged that he has one person he loves and has admitted those feelings to her and has no interest or fucking temptation to go with anyone else. Other girl keeps trying to make it happen.
But come on, Chris. She has that really annoying expression that she says at the end of every sentence.
Was it like, Adonaisu Badadu or something stupid?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, God. It's just the fact that they, as you mentioned, have a character with a sexual abuse backstory, and then they continue to use her as a fan service character is just so fucking wrong. Oh, God, that series was awful. Actually, going over my notes, I forgot that at one point there was a chapter, and it was right after this fucking Despair Event Horizon arc where all these girls are getting murdered and most of them are being brain controlled, and then right after that's done, there's a fucking chapter where they all play soccer and take each other's clothes off.
Yep. and every single arc has to have one bit where Satellizer is taking a shower and so on.
It's ridiculous.
My bottom three, one of them is actually Hunter x Hunter.
Oh.
I say this because we had a lot of just mediocre stuff, and I think that Hunter x Hunter was probably just built up too much for me. This isn't necessarily one of the worst manga that we read this year, but it is certainly one of my least favorites. It greatly annoyed me how little I liked it, basically. And all of the flaws that were in it, I really, really sat on my head, I think. So, I don't think it was terrible, but it was one of my least favorites.
I can understand.
Like I said, I have Freezing as one of my backups. I don't have Prison School as one of my backups, because although the fan service was just really, really stupid, the more I read it, the more I realized this is not something I should be taking seriously, and there's nothing in it that is too, too bad. So, secondly, I have Kamikaze Kaito Jean, because of the aforementioned girl nearly gets raped and immediately forgives the guy for it. Rather, she, I think, specifically says, "I'll forgive you for what you did. Now just don't do it again."
No. Just don't try it again there.
I think that I'm going to have to go back and listen to that episode again to remember all of it, but that one definitely stands out. And should be no surprise what my number one of these favorite series is. It's fucking Spider-Man, because it's the worst piece of shit I have ever had to read. Weekly Manga Recap. It is horrible.
It's still funny to me just in our discussion of it when it's like Spider-Man's like, "I hope you die and burn." Like, what the fuck, Spider-Man? No!
He just keeps on killing everyone. Everyone around him keeps on dying. It's like, who the fuck did this?
Doesn't he try to molest a girl at one point, too?
I think he's just accused of trying to molest her.
I thought he, tried
to,
like...
Dreams about raping his girlfriend or something.
Okay, that must have been it. I knew there was something that he has that's, really weird.
It's like, okay, I don't want to know that about the guy who has superhuman strength, man.
Oh, dear. So our top three favorite series end of the year, or recommendations we got.
Yeah.
My top three, one of them's, I tried not to go with the ones I thought you would immediately go with. Mm-hmm. So, of them, my favorites were Crimsons. Was on there.
Okay.
I really enjoyed Crimsons. I thought it's a short series, but it's tons of fun. It is exactly kind of what I read manga for, which is these ridiculous premises, and it sounds stupid on paper, but it's still actually funny and effective. I mean, there was a fucking fish orgy and a fish friend with fucking big fat cheeks and a nerdy fish friend with glasses. It's fucking goofy series, but
and
God,
the love interest had a hair clip.
It's so funny though. I have My Hero Academy, or My Boko Hero, whatever you want to call it.
Boko Hero Academy.
Yeah, My Hero Academy I have on there. I really enjoyed that. It's one that I really hope that Jump might take a look at it and put it in the magazine, but regardless, I thought it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. It was kind of a nice way to end the year. And then this might be a little bit of an odd one, but Bambino would be my other one for this year. I really did enjoy Bambi. And I will admit that last arc where he goes to New York is a fucking clusterfuck. But I really enjoyed this series otherwise. I really enjoyed the slow tone it took. I liked that this character slowly grew. I know that Infamous Planet, you know, when he talked about it, he's like, I didn't give a fuck about this thing at all. But I really enjoyed it. I know it's not going to be for everyone. It absolutely won't. But for some people, it will be their cup of tea. And it hit the right spots with me, and I enjoyed it.
It was also among my favorites. It wasn't, like, on my list or anything. But like I said, I've kept up with it, with the sequel series and stuff. So I still liked it quite a bit, despite how ridiculous that ending is.
That last arc is fucking, like, if you would cut it out, it'd be much better. But holy shit, it's almost so great that it's there.
Right. I also have My Hero Academia as one of my top three, but that's okay. I have backups.
Okay, very good.
So my number one favorite manga that we took this year, however, is Teppu. I freaking love that manga. I think that it is just wonderful. I love the fights. I love the characterization of Natsuo. I like the tone. Whenever it tries to be funny, I laughed. And I really, really want to see more of it. But unfortunately, it seems to be slow coming out. Then I have Fruits Basket, actually, to go for something almost completely different. I just like the way that it goes, and it's kind of like, I think it's probably the best shoujo series just in general that we have read.
Mm-hmm.
And since you took My Hero Academy, I will make my third actually Fairy Tale.
What?
Yeah, you know, not for the series itself, but because I like being able to talk about it with you.
Okay, that's fair enough then.
Fairy tale discussions are among my favorite chapters to recap, and I just really liked the, like I said, like 90-minute long conversation we had when I had caught up with it and was like, I fucking hate Frosch.
All right, that's fair enough. You stunned me at first, but your reasoning is actually very touching and very sweet. So
I was also surprised. I think it was one of the things that really surprised me because, you know, it took me a while to get going on it, and then once I finally did really start reading it, I came to realize, like, why you had managed to get, you know, 300 or 400 chapters deep into the series that you basically only ever complained about anymore. And so coming to understand that there was actually some stuff to enjoy in Fairy Tail as opposed to, oh, it's just a cheap One Piece knockoff, then... Yeah, it changed my opinion of it. Although then I got to the point where it was just like, by the way, remember that thing that I told you at that festival 100 years ago or something like that? Yeah, we're going to do that now.
We're going to do this thing that's definitely not like what One Piece did. But it's that thing that One Piece did in one chapter.
Oh, God, so lame.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, that covers it for our... for the year, basically, but you know, like I said, as we go into our now recap portion of Luke and Manga Recap, we are also going to talk about the series we regularly cover, and the point that they were at this time last year.
Let's look to see what happened in the last year of manga.
So, where was... I don't actually have anything written down for where the manga was last year, so you're going to have to actually lead the conversation on this. Right. So,
we'll start off with Bleach. Again, the series that... ended within the year, with the exception of Naruto, because that was in the magazine as well. We'll do those at the end, so, like, All You Need Is Kill and all that, that'll be at the after we get past World Trigger. And Bleach was, at the start of this year, Nick, Bleach had just had Master Masculine release his form.
Oh my
so he hadn't... He hadn't even been beat yet. The end of the chapter was Renji with, like, his sword showing that it had just been released after blocking an attack. Okay, so that's the point they were at, the Master Masculine fight.
Oh, God.
At the point we're at...
That actually sounds about right.
At the point we're at now, has anything happened since then? I mean, there's been stuff. A lot of stuff has happened in the year. Some people were saying the Aznot fight happened this year. I thought that was the year before, but I might have been mistaken. But that there was definitely the Gremmy fight with Kenpachi. We had the female Vandenreich showing up. Pepe was there. Obviously, the Zero
Squad
had that fight.
You mean I've been saying
Unohana's
dead and never coming back for a whole year now and she's still to come back?
You've been saying it for over a year, buddy. She died a while ago.
Oh, God. Yeah, it feels... Oh, God. It's just... I guess it feels like it's been longer because for the last several months it's just been people I don't care about fighting people I don't care about. Before I got to that point, I guess, yeah, you know, there was the fight with Gremmy, the fight with Master Masculine, the fight with Asnote, fight with, like, let's see, there was, what, Baz B fighting Hitsugaya briefly, and then there was the whole zombie thing. Yeah, a lot of stuff did happen.
But what happened in the plot? Like, what narratively moved forward, or was there Ichigo any character
down
development?
To Soul Society, and then tried to go back up to the Soul King's palace.
It's weird, like, if you look...
He just did a complete U-turn! It was completely pointless!
If you look at fucking the Year of Bleach, the only real plot development has happened within the last month, which has just been Yuhabak arrived in the upper echelon area, and he's now apparently at full strength. That's basically about as far as the plot developed, because everything else in between then has just been, like, fucking characters fighting each other. And the, you know what? It was an amusing reminder, Nick. It has been almost 2 years since Grimmjow was teased to us. And he still hasn't shown up since then.
Or even if it's not Grimmjow, whoever the fuck it was. At least Ganju showed up after they teased him.
I am so hoping that he never shows up. They just never bring him back up. Oh, man. So, no, that was baffling to me. Not a great year for Bleach.
So this week was chapter 611, Rayo's death. So last time, Juhabak basically exploded Ichibe, and in this chapter he falls in pieces. Like, his feet are still on the ground, but then his head, like, falls behind him as Juhabak is like, "Oh yes, as I foresaw, you die 3 steps short, boy," and just walks past him. And apparently all the other members of Squad Zero are dead / beaten too. I don't think we saw all of that happen. I know that we saw some of them, like, get shot and, like, hit and stuff, but none of them drop except for Ichibe, I think.
At this point, I'm kind of glad we didn't have to see all their individual fights.
So, then Jibug is like, "Oh, yeah, they have fallen, and now it's your turn to fall, Rayo," which means Soul King. So, so he goes up to find the Soul King, and then we cut down to where Ichigo and company, they're...
Hold on a moment. Can we take a moment to address the very necessary 2-page spread of thing happening?
It's the
with title card.
It's the cannon shooting up through the platform.
Oh, thank God that got a 2-page spread.
So stupid.
Oh man, I don't think I could have grasped the magnitude of that.
Oh, it's amazing to think that nothing happened this year in Bleach. So, they land, Ganju falls out for a little pratfall, and Orihime's like, "I'm sorry that you leaked out of the Santin Keshun, Ganju." And he's like, "No, it's fine." But why did he leak out, though? Did she, like, deliberately leave a man-sized hole in it because she doesn't like him?
Well, no, because remember, it just, like, opens, like, it has that weird way of opening up, and I guess he just fell out first.
Okay, whatever.
I don't know.
Then he should have held on to something, idiot.
Oh, no, you mean... Oh, she had a spell that she was using? Oh, that, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's her shield thing.
Oh, then no, I have no idea how he fell out of that.
It's because she made a man-sized hole so he could fall out of it.
That or he's fat, I don't know.
"I can block any blow that I have the will to protect myself against, but God, you're so fat."
Oh, Jesus, you big pig. Yoink, yoink.
So Chad is like, "What happened? Is the battle over? Did I not get to do anything again? Oh, no."
Although, you know, Nick, with the way that they've set this up now, these guys have to fight the Royal Guard. Because it should happen that the most ridiculous, underpowered characters in the series should be the ones that have to take out the most powerful mooks in the series.
So... Chad's like, "Oh my god, is that Squad Zero?" And Ichigo's like, "Yeah, it's a show." I don't know why he calls him that, but whatever. He's like, "Yeah, he trained me and Rukia with Squad Zero." So Orihime's like, "I'll try healing him." And Ganju's like, "How? He's in pieces." Orihime can bring people back from the dead. She can bring people back from the dead. Why is this never used? Why does there have to be some special power that Ichibe has so that when Ichigo says his name, he just regenerates? Orihime can bring people back from the dead. She's done it before. why is Rehima never allowed to do anything?
But Nick, she's showing concern.
I'm so pissed off. Why did Rehima get built up to have this power? This still annoys me. This is like the greatest crime that Bleach like ever committed, was dedicating an entire arc to building up Rehime's power and how she has the ability to defy God and decide who lives and who dies, and can reject literally anything if she's got a strong enough will, and then has her do nothing. She is worse than Hinata and Tenten combined.
Oh, that's not... Well, has she ever hit anyone with that little murder-death thing?
Apollo?
Has she hit anyone since that first guy?
No!
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah, I guess she is Tenten.
She, like, has... Now I'm pretty sure she's only, like, beaten one person ever.
Aw.
I mean, she's just been the white maid whom people remember now.
Or when they don't already have
people
a backup.
People had to have, like, special powers, like, to special medical technology in order to reattach people's limbs instead of her just regenerating the limb like she did with the Grimmjow. Because nobody lets her do anything. It's stupid. It's pointless. So, anyway, Ichibe is like, oh, I'm back to normal now because you said my name, because all powers dwell in names, so I received a tiny bit of your power and healed myself. Instead of having the person who can bring me back from the dead just, you know, do that. So, Ichibe is like, okay, Ichigo, you need to go and stop Yubop because, you know, we lost, and I can't regain my strength in time, so you've got to go do it. There's nobody else to do it. Go, bye. And then they run off in order to go save Rayo. As we see Rayo, who is apparently some dude in a large amber crystal thing, as Yubak is stabbing a sword into his chest through the crystal and killing him. And he's like, oh, farewell, Rayo, my father who has seen the future. And that's it.
Man, that'd be great if this was the end of the series right here. Oh, like, Mego is just like, Ichigo, you must stop Yubak. Hard cut to him fucking succeeding in winning step. I win!
Yay.
I did it! No one stopped me! Aw, we wish. We can only dream. Mm-hmm. So, Fairy Tail, Nick. Fairy Tail, at the start of this year, and I think I had basically just gotten back into recapping Fairy Tail, and I remember when this chapter came up and I was talking about it, I mentally bookmarked it. I was like, when we get to the end of the year, I'm going to remember have to bring this up again as the first chapter this year. Because this year started off with Kyoka doing her bondage torture rack thing with Urza.
Yeah.
Her little pain BDSM session.
Yeah.
With Urza straddled and butt-facing the camera the whole time.
Yeah. Well, a lot actually has happened this year then. They went through the whole arc.
Yeah, essentially the majority of this arc, it's basically on its final follow-up chapters now, has essentially happened throughout this year. A little bit at the end of the year before, some of the other demons kind of wrecking havoc and all that. But yeah, the majority in this year, and we had some very powerful moments. We did have some good moments.
Gray having his confrontation with Silver.
Very good
and,
moment.
Inheriting his powers, that was a big thing.
That was very awesome. Also,
Wendy got a haircut.
Which doesn't. The question I still ask is why, both in the context of the story and out of the context. I'm like, in context,
I'm not going to be afraid anymore. Since when have you been afraid of anything?
What did getting your haircut do for you? Like, what is this motivation? Because you cut your hair, you're like, we must stop face, cut hair, stand there for 30 chapters. Like, you've done nothing since then. But in context, what was your thought process? Like, I almost was too despaired and fucking depressed to do anything, but I won't let that control me. Snip, 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 snip. Oh, I gotta even this out. I know there's literally thousands of bombs that are going to destroy all magic on the continent in front of me, but I need to make sure this is even for my very important haircut. Like, what was the point of this, Wendy?
Look, I'm not going to be afraid anymore, except of split ends.
Except about getting it tangled in doorknobs. Like, it's funny because in the fucking title card for this week, Wendy's on the cover and she has long hair. It was like, what happened? 50-year-old short hair bullshit.
I'm not afraid to let it grow back out.
Such a stupid fucking change. But there are still good moments this year.
The 6 or however many months of Fairy Tail that we got this year, I liked it.
I also like Gajeel. He had that cool fight against the two dudes whose names I'm never going to remember. But
I remember that. He's like a big fish guy. Like, His name is right there, Chris.
Fucking Kraken dude, and I think there was like a fire fox of some kind. I don't remember really, but he was kind of cool. Gajeel did some cool stuff, and Levy.
We got the bit where Levy did the whole kiss him in order to breathe air into his lungs thing. He was just like, just draw air.
Stupid.
Oh yeah, I forgot what my only power is.
That one thing I do. But there are also some very bad lows to this year. I mean, the, you know, starting off with a weird bondage fetish torture scene was obviously one of them.
Natsu and Lasana getting thrown into a cell, also naked.
Yes, that was very gratuitous as well. But I still think the lowest point of this year is... Well, no, the bondage thing might have been worse, but the fact that Urza just in her fight, it's so ridiculous. Like, I've turned your nerves so much so that a fucking gust of wind is agonizing pain for you. You
can't feel anything but pain. You can't see, you can't hear, you can't taste, you can't smell. But because she loves Fairy Tale so much... She can sense her and punch the shit out of her.
And she fucking rocks her goddamn world. It's not even a contest once she gets it.
And it's like the most Fairy Tale way of ending a fight, isn't it?
And even one of the characters in the next chapter is just like, and she did it because she's Urza. You're just like, that's not a good reason, guys.
Rosh agrees. Shut the fuck up.
But it's weird because it's I don't think it was a great year for Fairy Tale, but it's a very different kind of bad to what Bleach was.
Yeah.
Bleach did nothing, whereas Fairy Tail did stuff, but it did some very stupid points too.
Well, that made the fact that it had bad moments, at least there's like, you have bad moments while the story was progressing though.
Yeah, and at least there were good moments too. I can't
there
think
was
of
a
really
ton
any
of fighting, all yeah. with all of the fights involving at least one character who was like a main character and you had reason to care about.
Mm-hmm. So, our chapter this week is chapter 414, Drops of Fire. And as I said, that covers Wendy, and she's collecting... I guess she's collecting rain in her hoodie. It is water. I thought it was a pocket on, like, a sweatshirt.
Water like that in your shirt?
Magic. Yeah, she has magic, water-resistant clothing of some kind. I don't know. She also is writing in her diary, but it's really lame and stupid to read it. Anyway, so Xerath has shown up, and he's taken the Book of the End, and everyone's like, Xerath! And Xerath's like, Mardgear, you've done well. You're only one stop away from reviving End. You may find your rest now. And Mardgear's like, Mardgear, we'll fulfill your wish! And Xerath's like, no, you won't. Click, and turns into a book. And then sets him on fire and kills him.
That's so awesome.
And it's like, you don't even get any final words from Mardgear. It's not like, Mardgear will return. I will return. I, Mardgear, will never be heard from again. Poof.
He just fucking kills him. So cold.
He just turns him into a book and ignites him.
That's awesome.
Gray's like, what the fuck? Didn't you create him? He's like, yeah, I did. But I don't need him anymore. I came here today to settle things with you. But Akbalagia had to interfere. Will he end history again, or will a miracle happen? Even I can't say. And,
Matthew's like, just like, what does that mean?
And he's like, no, no, I've got more cryptic things to say. He says, well, even if you can manage to survive this hopeless situation, I will treat you to a whole new level of despair. And his eyes start and kind of get serious.
And that's what Mardgear just said.
So I was like, fuck you, and he pieces out. He literally just...
Into a book.
He just fucking frooshes, and then just vanishes. He just walks off, and everyone's like...
Oh, thank God for this incredibly convenient dust cloud.
And everyone's like, well, we had the book, but I guess we can't get it now. He left. We then cut back to the sky, where Akhnologia is battling Ignail, and they're having their epic dragon battle, and Akhnologia is taunting them like, is this the power the Fire Dragon King can muster? And Ignail's like... Well, I did just wake up from a very long nap. And in the background, you can hear like a studio audience like, oh, Ignail, you char, you card, you.
Too many.
Oh, God. That can be a horrifying visual for a anyway, suddenly Natsu starts hearing a voice that says, Ignil's contacting him, and he's like, Natsu, I have things to tell you. There were two reasons the dragons were put inside the Dragon Slayers. It was to keep you from turning into dragons yourselves. We had to create defenses within you to prevent it from ever happening, which is why we were unable to leave your bodies even when you were in danger, to explain why we never came out to help you before this moment.
It's a very convenient explanation, but I'm glad we have an explanation.
Yes. he's like, but the second reason is that we needed you to fight Acnologia! And Ignil, or Natsu's saying, why are you telling me this? You said that you would, come back and explain this to me after we're done. And Ignil's like, he's too strong! Natsu, don't come! And, Natsu's screaming like, no, if we do it together, we can beat him! And we see this scene of Ignos, lashing out in this giant scratch sound effect, and we see his grab at Acnologia's arm. But then we cut to the next two-page spread, where we then see Acnologia has ripped right through Igno with a giant crater, just a fucking hole in his torso. Igno now, is dying, he's falling, but as he's dying, he talks again to Natsu, and he's like, I was watching over you all along as you matured. You've grown so big and strong. And before Acnologia blows him into fucking oblivion, he says, the days I spent with you were the happiest of my life. You gave me the strength of love. All it hurts! All it hurts! It burns! The love doesn't help! It's still burning!
Apocalypse Dragon!
And then,
Power of love is nothing! Boom!
Fucking finally, the Apocalypse Dragon's like, finally! I put down one of you motherfuckers in your friendship and love! Suck it! I just have to kill you when you can't hold hands.
And presumably he's actually dead now.
Yes, that's the thing, because, a big running theme in Fairy Tail is there's always a happy ending. But this is one of the few exceptions where I doubt that's the case, and the reason is Hiro's done this exact thing before in his previous series, Rave Master, which quite a lot of people mentioned when they were talking about it or sending us messages on it. This is almost identically what happens in Rave Master. There's an early arc in Rave Master where Haru has been trying to find his father for so long. He runs into the main villain of the series through this whole battle trying to lead up to him. At the end, his dad shows up all of a sudden, says, son, I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about, and I'll tell you all of them after I go handle this super dangerous mission that I'm very confident I'll return from. And then he dies at the end of it. He doesn't get to tell him anything. I was like, it's like the exact same fucking thing. His fucking dad shows up, tells him, like, I've got a lot of important things to tell you, but I'm gonna go fly off and do something first. Totally be back. Oh shit, I'm dead. And then, I stay dead, hopefully. I feel like Ignil is going to stay dead. I feel like this is gonna be one of the few moments of Fairy Tail where we actually are going to get a character death that sticks. Though I imagine we'll also probably get, like, a fucking Spirit World family discussion at some point. But still, it's a tough chapter for me to read because it's so hard to separate the fact that I've seen this exact same story from Hiro before, and it's kind of just hanging on me a little bit, but still enjoyable to a certain extent.
Okay, so then, oh geez, what's next?
Well, technically, next we would talk about Food Wars. Even though Food Wars started in Jump this year, we might as well just recap it in the regular order.
Yeah, because we've had, like, 6 chapters of it.
Yeah. We might as well, it's going to be Food Wars, Gakkyo Hotai, and Hi-Fi Cluster right in a row, and we'll just get through those.
Okay. So, Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma. Last time, Akira revealed his rapier thingy, with, his special dish, which they compared to a rapier in comparison to Kurokiba having a Buster Sword, basically. And so now it's Soma's turn, basically. And, it must be my connection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
I can't seem to access Shonen Jump now.
Oh, you want me to talk it for you? I don't know any of these character names, though, unfortunately.
I think that I'm going to actually need to reset my connection, dude.
Oh, no!
It's okay. It'll take 5 minutes, I think. Oh, wait. Oh. Is it back? Oh, wait, it's back.
Okay, never mind. We're good.
All right. Food Wars Shogaraki no Soma. It's chapter 101 now. And this is, let's see. Where the fuck is it? God damn it.
Wait, hold on a second.
Here it is.
Now I'm a bit worried, Nick. Apparently I didn't read the chapter title next week for Fairy Tail, because at the end of the chapter they preview what the next chapter is going to be called.
Yes.
And hold on, I need to get to the page. Why are you sending me to like a chapter that happened 6 months ago? Fucking Fairy Tail.
No.
Let me see. The next page or next week's chapter is called. Oh no, that is the Power of Life. Okay, now someone told me it was that is the Power of Love. Or friendship? No, he could be dead. I think he will be.
All right. Now it's working.
Okay.
Chapter 101 of Food Wars is a forged blade. And we get this color page as the cover of Soma in, like, old samurai-style clothing preparing to draw a katana. And so this opens up with Ishiki calling out... Ishiki is the guy from the Polar Star dorm who... normally takes his clothes off, but he's well-dressed for this case, I think. And so he's basically calling out this guy who is one of the Academy's top 10 students. He basically is this big businessman type of guy. And this is all very vague details because this is stuff that I think happened like 30 chapters ago. You know, this guy being introduced and so on. So... he says, you know, you're the one who has arranged for all this to happen as the producer. And he's like, what are you talking about? And everyone's like, oh my god, someone's getting his dish all prepared. So we're going to catch up with all those details later. And so he has prepared takikomi rice, which he has like his pike just basted in all this stuff. The pike has already been, you know, lathered with breading and so on and so forth. There's rice surrounding it. Leonoria is very excited about this, and she's like, oh, hurry up and serve it already! He serves it up. She has a taste, and she has her typical orgasm face from tasting stuff. Dojima also tastes it, and he's like, oh, I can feel the joy of fall and fish seeping into my whole body. Yeah, okay. He tries to describe what happens, but Leonoria beats him to it and has this, like, three-paragraph-long explanation of stuff, which I'm not going to attempt to repeat. Essentially she concludes that, oh my gosh, this pike is like of a quality exactly on par with the other two. And Kurikiba says, what, so his pike wasn't just a pile of gross looking rust? What is this stuff he packed it in? And it's Nuka rice bran. And Todokoro realizes that he has prepared basically pickled pike, essentially in order to deepen the umami flavors and thus erase the difference between the freshness of their pikes. He has pickled it in order to do it, and Soma has this little private thought where he thinks about all of the different methods he used in order to age pike and all the different techniques he learned from people, and he, you know, privately thanks them all. And one of the people observing is like, ah, he's scraped the rust off, and what looked like a dull blade was turned into a legendary sword. Like ancient swordsmiths who made famous katana out of lumps of steel, he forged his pike with his own two hands. And someone's like, oh my gosh, he's definitely going to get high marks. But then they look over, and the dean hasn't disrobed like he did with the other two, which means that he's not as impressed with this dish as with the others. And even Dojima and Leonora have put down their chopsticks, and so they don't even want any more. So someone's like, do you guys want any seconds? Come on. And no one's like, nah, I'm good. So Dojima says, alright, it's about time for the judging. Then we briefly cut back to Ishiki confronting the producer, and he says, you were the one who engineered Soma's match with Subaru Mimasaka. After all, the only one who could feasibly manipulate the match pairings is you, and you figured that if you used the rivalry Soma has with Takumi, you could easily goad him into biting on the match, fighting for the sake of his friend on the big stage, and failing. There's no greater humiliation than that. You pulled all the strength from the shadows, never getting your hands dirty. That's very like you, Aizon. So, I don't know why he thinks that he's done this, because it seems just as likely to me that this could have randomly occurred, because, you know, shonen manga. But I guess that maybe he'll reveal the motive later on. So Dojima is about to announce the conclusion of the judgment, and all Soma's friends are like, oh no, he's going to lose. But then Soma says, if you all want to have seconds, I was thinking of pouring some of this over it for you. Which intrigues everybody as he says, my dish isn't complete yet. And Ishiki says to Meizan, your plan has failed because you thought you could trip him up with your plots and bring him down. But in the end, the only one who wound up caught in your clever trap was you. This is just the beginning. His cooking skills get even more frightening from here. And then we get this image of Soma revealing his katana like he had on the colored page as he says, allow me to show you the real edge of my blade.
Now, why couldn't... There must have been one chapter in this series thus far they could have just cut out to make this chapter 100, because this fits chapter 100 so much better.
Yeah, Soma getting to be the badass instead of...
Yeah, like at the end of it being like, allow you to show me the real edge of my blade, because I'm a katana cookmaster thingy.
I don't think the exact chapter count was on the author's mind.
No, probably not. I really don't think you should just cut huge holes in this story for the sake of my mild fucking, like, oh, wouldn't that be neato? This mild coincidence?
I mean, the fact that it's coming to a conclusion around this time, you know, this whole story arc is pretty appropriately timed in general, so. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how'd you like it?
Good chapter. I mean... I need to see what this is. It's tough right now, though, for me to be like, oh, man, that looks so good, because I have no interest whatsoever in Pike. And the fact that they're pickling it makes it sound even somehow more fucking disgusting.
Weird Asians.
I'm just like, oh, you eat fish and you pickle it? Oh! But I do like what Shokugeki no Soma delivers. It's just hard for me right now to truly grasp everything that's happening, because I still have so much of this series to catch up on, and that's one of my goals for the starting months of this year, is to try to actually get finally caught back up with the series. But I do enjoy this chapter, and just as, you know, even though it, you know, only has been in the magazine like 2 months, I am really glad that we have Shokugeki no Soma Food Wars in the magazine now. I really am glad it's there. It's another good series. It's one where I can enjoy the chapters each week, even if I have to skip over a couple pages really quickly so no one at work sees me staring at fucking ladies being like, oh, this food's so good! It's also worth noting, we didn't bring it up, but Assassination Classroom had its first chapter in this magazine.
In the English Shonen Jump. Just going to do that to promote the volumes?
Yes, it's just to promote the volumes right now. It's not something that's running in the magazine. But regardless of that, it is still available for you to vote on during the issue survey. So, I mean, first and foremost, if you don't have Weekly Shonen Jump online, yep, you live it. If you live in the US, England, any of those places that have it, you have to get it. I highly recommend you grabbing it. It's a great thing to have. It's not expensive at all. Once a year fee of like $27, I think it is, and you can usually find a discount.
It comes down to 50 cents an edition, basically.
Yeah, it's absolutely a great deal. But if you have the subscription and you don't do the survey, I highly recommend you do it this week if you are interested in ever seeing Assassination Classroom in the magazine, because if you make it very evident that, you know, you rank it in your top four, or if you rank it number one or whatever, they're clearly going to see that. They said Food Wars would never run in the magazine because it had too adult of material. Now, their reasons for Assassination Classroom not running are a little bit more politically charged. You know, obviously gun violence in a classroom is a little bit more of a taboo subject than naked women, but it's still possible that Assassination Classroom could eventually find its way into the magazine if enough people really like it and they look at it for a while. So if that's your interest, I would suggest going out and checking out the issue survey.
Mm-hmm. So what happened in the Hi-Fi cluster then?
Oh, wouldn't we have Gakuyo Hotai?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I'm sorry.
I was like, did I fuck up my alphabet again, Nick?
No, and unfortunately, my web browser just crashed because apparently there is no end to the technical difficulties that we're going to be having this week.
2015's ringing us in with a fucking bent-over table fucking.
Welcome to 2015, everybody. The technical difficulties will be even more egregious.
They're like, how is that possible? That one dude's hard drive crashed for like 3 weeks. Do you want me to start off then?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so,
I read it, but I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Gakuyo Hotai Chapter 5, the Suichi Higashide or Higashide cheating case. The Sasuke cheating case. So, our chapter, okay. Mysterious figure in the classroom, and he is looking at Abaku's. I don't know if it's his. I guess it must be his, like, class record or, what's the fucking school record? I guess that's the term for it. Basically his history.
His permanent record.
Permanent record, that's it. And he's, you know, discussing, he's like, he was started being an active attorney in the fourth grade, but before that he spent 3 years incarcerated in Onigashima Elementary. But after that, he won innocent verdicts in numerous class arbitrations and successfully earned one of the moniker of one of the three tongues. Three grade schoolers said to possess a divine tongue, which is such a
That just sounds weird. So dirty.
It sounds that's, so that's creepy.
That's dirtier than when Ariana was introduced as having God's tongue, man. At least that was meant to be sort of sexual.
And the mysterious figure is saying, it's been 5 years since that day. What the heck were you thinking, you bloody classroom ghost?
Dun, dun, dun.
And then we cut away to the classroom where everyone's having a kanji test today. And the teacher's even like, I did give you advance notice. And then, like, this half her face is still like, I'm still all stressed from that Suzuki case. But we're kind of. But we're getting, like, you know, some exposition kind of leanness into it. Like, the world of shadow and light exists in the school world, too. Kind of showing all these kids trying to take this kanji test. And then we cut away to PE class where all the girls are fucking fawning over Suichi Higashide or
Suichi Higashide.
Yes. I'll say Nick and then you just say the name, okay?
You got it.
Alright, so they're all like, Nick?
Higashide!
You're so cool! Look our way!
He's like,
Oh, do you have it open? Do you want to pick it up?
Yeah, I've got it open now, yeah.
Okay, go for it.
So even Tento is like, oh my god, isn't Higashide amazing? He's like, Tento, you have like some real issues, man.
You're obsessive about everybody, dude.
Dude, you need to, like, God, just, I don't know, see a therapist or something. Like, I know that you're 12 and you're, like, having your sexual awakening or something, but seriously, like, control yourself. Abaku is like, he puts on airs, so whatever. Besides, I've got a grudge against him for confiscating my DS! Because he was playing it in class. Apparently, he didn't even manage to win his rumpa against him, too, like he did with the teacher.
Well, the teacher was a fucking pushover. I guess he was just like, you're not going to rumpa.
he was just like, why shouldn't I? Because like, it's the rules. Give the fucking DS to me.
Give the goddamn DS, you dumb fuck.
My ego won't allow me to let you take this away from me. And so they just have a bit of... Basically, Abaku is kind of talking with Tento and his friends and so on and so forth. Pine is... They're doing the whole, like, vaulting thing, which I believe is more common in Japanese PE than in American PE. Like, you, like, put up levels to vault over. And for whatever reason, when Pine does it, she just, like, lands right on top of the thing, and they're like, oh, go Pine-chan, yay! And it's just like, are you trying to make this sexual, too? What's wrong with you people?
I thought it was just supposed to be, like, she's very weak and pathetic, like, physically. But they're still cheering for her anyway, because they're fanatics.
Mm, okay.
They're all big fat fanboys, essentially.
Tento gets distracted by something. He feels like eyes gazing at someone, and he's like, was I just imagining that? But no, one of the students is cloaked in shadow and is glaring at something.
I hope that's what the kid actually looks like. Like, we get in the class and he just looks like fucking Ebon from Shad Static Shock. Everyone's just like, oh yeah, that's
God,
Steve.
Oh my god, what a reference.
I feel like I pulled that out on Weekly Manga Recap before, but if not...
Static Shock.
Good show. I don't want to talk about it too much. I don't want to talk about it too much, because Infamous Planet's going to message me on Skype for 30 minutes.
God,
like, I need you to explain this fucking WB cartoon shit to me, dude.
Now put in the clip where he meets Batman and Robin, and then he asks about where Robin is, and Batman says, he's with the Titans.
You fuck. He's like, I don't even know how to get that.
So then, let's see here. The teacher hands out tests and is like, oh, there was this perfect score, Higashide. And they're like, oh, you're so amazing, Higashide. And then they're like, oh, Pine-chan's amazing too, she got a 90. And then they go over to, I swear, this girl is a frog. She is part frog or something. She has the weirdest goddamn face. So, she says objection. At first people are like, oh, come on, Bucky, stop complaining about it. Wait a minute, it wasn't you. He's like, no, I'm over here. Then who was that? And it is Kiriko Nakayama, who is the number 2 class prodigy in class. And she has the weirdest goddamn head. I can't stop staring at it. She's so weird looking.
I like it, though, because it's I really like Obata's art style with some of these characters like this. I like this, like, goofy, sad face.
She was also flanked by her confidant, Aoko Asa.
Yes.
Or is that Asa? Maybe the letter's, like, cut off by the line of her shirt.
No, I think it's Asa.
So, like, oh, you just upset because you lost to Higashida again. It's like, no, she got a 98 instead of 100. She's like, if I hadn't made one stupid mistake, I would have gotten 102. But then she's like, but I saw something interesting. Higashida was peeking inside his desk all throughout the first period test. So, I wonder if someone should look at it. So Higashida's like, okay, go ahead and look. I don't have anything to hide. And it's like, oh my god, there's all sorts of markings written all over it. It's cheating for the kanji test.
There's shit you should have hidden!
And so, of course, Higashida is shocked, and he's like, I didn't know anything about this, someone set me up! And Pine is like, oh, didn't he do something yesterday, too? And Aoka's like, we'll just have an arbitration session, and so we'll get this whole thing sorted out, and if he really did cheat, he'll just disgrace himself before all of you. So, I demand that Corp be convened in fifth period tomorrow to hear the cheating case. And then we're like, yeah, let's do that. And Pine's like, there's no way I can lose this one because all the evidence is right here. You're fucking on.
This time I won't get hosed.
There definitely won't be some piece of evidence that I don't manage to find that Ibaku does.
I'm definitely not overlooking anything this time.
One of these days, Pine is going to win a case. I hope.
I don't think so. I feel like she's supposed to be the Winston Payne in the series.
Oh, poor girl. Then Tento's like, oh man, look at all the studying that Higashida does. Look at his drill book. This is how much he studies. And Higashida is just like, well, that's normal, right? Like, no. Aren't you a kid? Don't you have, like, fun?
Oh. Nick, was this what your school notebooks look like as a kid? Because I feel like you were a studious kid.
I didn't take notes as a kid.
Oh, okay.
You
were just all natural smart.
Until I was in middle school, I don't think I ever had to take notes, basically. Like, I wrote down stuff that they told us to write down, but I didn't need to write it down.
But you got good grades?
I was very, very smart in elementary school. I got dumber as I got older. It was weird.
See, I didn't need to take notes, but I also didn't do very well. I was a very good, like, B to C student.
I got that feeling.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mean to say feeling. I was like,
you didn't mean to say it out loud. Is what you're trying to say.
Something like I feel you or I get you, and say I combine them.
But no, your real feelings came out to the surface, and I see. Go ahead,
you're just stupid, Chris. Actually, from previous conversations, I did get that feeling, so never mind. I don't feel ashamed about that. I've known you long enough, and you told me enough about yourself.
I'm confused. What did we end with? Am I smart or not?
Anyway, so...
No!
Ibaku, Higashida is like, I would never do something that would violate the school rules. That's why I'm the class president. Ibaku's like, I've been betrayed plenty of times by people who are delinquent pretending to be star students, and so there's tension between client and lawyer and so on. So they go over stuff, like they recap the evidence that they know of, and Tento is like, Miss Hanzuki had a great point where she, established the basis for the charge, which was that, okay, the perp is someone who was able to be alone in the classroom for a fair amount of time before or after the exam in order to, scribble all of the kanji inside of Higashida's desk. And so Higashida, you stayed behind the classroom by yourself after school yesterday, didn't you? And this desk is certainly yours because the nameplate sticker is tightly adhered, so it's definitely your desk. But there was also Nakayama, who entered the school first thing in the morning, so maybe she would have had time. And then, during second period phys ed, Asa ran off by herself and could have potentially snuck into the classroom instead of actually going to the bathroom or whatever. So they try and test that theory. It's like, okay, maybe she ran and wrote it, and they write up this whole thing. It's like, okay, this is where the test took place, this is when it was discovered, this is the amount of time that they had, blah, 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 blah. And they send Tento to run and try and write inside the desk, and he keeps on getting slower and slower times as he gets more and more tired, and Baku's like, okay, you need to go faster. No, please stop. He's like been running for like an hour. And he's like a 12-year-old kid with stupid ladybug polka dots on his head. So they're like, okay, what is going on? Let's Hidachi is like, you know, this experiment supposed that the crime was committed in 5 minutes during phys ed, but what if Nakayama's the culprit? I mean, she could have accomplished it in the morning. And so Habaka says, yeah, you know, I figured that could have been possible, but there would have been a point before that where everyone was cleaning and emptying their desks, so you should have discovered the writing inside your desk if that were the case. So either you wrote it down yourself, in which case you wouldn't have reacted to the writing inside your desk, or it happened after you would have checked your desk. So then they're like, oh, what if there was an erasable marker? Because then they could have erased it or something like that. But no, it's not erasable. But as Habaku looks down at the eraser, he's like, is this for real? He's like, yeah, lots of us have them. And Nakayama and Asa have them as well. And Habaku's like, oh, really? I've got it. I knew who had done it from the moment I first saw the desk, but I just couldn't figure out how it had happened. But that one missing piece has now been filled in thanks to you, Tento. The perp used one of those erasable markers and then fooled everyone's eyes using a daring measure, instantaneously transforming that desk into a cheat sheet. The question is, what was written when? I know who the perp is. You better prepare yourself. This Shuichi Hide cheating case, I'll rompo the hell out of it. And Hideshi just kind of like, I don't know. There's a rumble sound effect, but I'm not sure what is rumbling.
The atmosphere, Nick.
Yes, the atmosphere is rumbling.
The tension.
Rumbling. Tension is rumbling through the air. Who do you think did it?
I'm torn on this one. Like, I feel obviously like the culprit is clearly set up to be those two girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they have some connection to it. But I can't help but feel like there's something he knows that he's not saying. Like, I feel like what we're going to find out is that these marks were made during the test.
Hmm.
While he was doing it, while he was writing it down, something happened. Like, you know, he was using a pen that was bleeding through his desk and he didn't realize it or something like that.
Hmm.
Something along those lines, I feel like that's what we're going to find out. Like, I feel like the red herring is that they both left during recess. That's, you know, not going to mean anything. So that's why I feel like there's a little something we don't know here yet.
Maybe, for example, he was writing them inside his desk during the test for some reason, and then he thought to erase them, but then he couldn't.
Or something along those lines. Or, this is a long shot where the teacher's just being a bitch again.
That's entirely possible.
I don't think that's the answer, but it's one that came up.
It was the janitor.
I just feel like these girls, I feel like they're still involved in some way, but I feel like the way they are set up to be involved is a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also really bad at mysteries, so.
Oh, these are also really weird mysteries, too.
Yeah.
And they don't reveal a tremendous amount of information. It's also kind of one of those things where it's like Abaka said, you know, sometimes you suspect who did it, but it's really hard to figure out how they did it because of the lack of information mm-hmm. presented. You have to make a lot of, like, long connections, basically.
Now, Nick, are you prepared for the glory that is going to be High Fly Cluster?
I didn't read it.
Okay. So, last week, Kendera and the group showed up and at the Parliament building, and Noto, the guy who attacked Kendera in the past and killed the rest of his unit, was standing in front of the gate to block him. And so Kendera and Noto have a fight, and as Noto's fighting him, he's like, you know, you're always surrounded by people. Even though you thought you were incompatible in this ability society, you were always at the center of things. But in reality, that was your weak point. Friendship and kindness won't get you anywhere, and I'm going to exploit that weakness in you. But then shockers, Nick. Having friends is what actually helps Kendera get the advantage.
Because, oh my god, it's like having friends there to help him, like,
it's like having a 3-on-1 fight is really advantageous for the three guys.
Wait, you're meaning to tell me that when John Cena takes on three people, just because two of those people are weak, they still help the strong guy out?
He should still be at a disadvantage. It should be really, really hard for him to beat three people at once. That was stupid. But before they can actually finish the fight, the landscape mole comes out and he throws them away with his ability. And he's like, thanks for guarding, Nato. And he's like, you're all done? He's like, yes, the series is being canceled in like 2 fucking chapters, so I really didn't have time to draw my plot out. I got the other mold out because we have things to do.
Well, that's good. Also, my name. Yes. My name is Noto. Nato. Noto.
I'll call you what I want. Look, you're gonna be gone. You're gonna be fucking oblivion in 2 weeks anyway. So I'll call you whatever the fuck I want, Nancy.
Also, I have a voice now.
Yes, I have a very distinct voice that I'll have for 2 weeks before I'm cancelled. Because like clearly...
It sounds like the Twilight Zone host, kind of.
Because clearly, that is what's going to happen. Rod Sterling?
Yeah, a little bit.
I was going to say, don't tell me I have a good Rod Sterling impersonation, because it will never...
It's kind of like the tone and a little...
I wasn't actually going for a Rod Sterling. I was just going for, like, a douchey person.
Do you think Rod Sterling's a douche?
Yeah, I'm like, what an asshole! Who's fucking taking people to the Twilight Zone? Always fucking walking in like, this dude's having an average fucking life. Too bad he walked into the Twilight Zone, yeah, now he's a mummy.
Like, maybe it's that eventually it gets to the point where like the people that he's talking about actually hear him. He's like, wait, why are you talking about me like that? I'm right here.
I elaborated on this before, that it's a grand fear of mine to like be in a room like doing something and someone comes in, like a Rod Sterling impersonator, and just starts Gut Sterling like monologue. Like,
what are you talking about?
Like, here we see Christopher Larios casually eating a sandwich. What he doesn't realize is between those slabs of bread and that ham is a little spread of the Twilight Zone. Because at that point, I don't know if I should keep eating the sandwich. Is the sandwich going to kill me? Am I the sandwich? Am I in this weird alternate reality where sandwiches now eat me? Am I an alien and by eating this sandwich, I'm going to die?
And I'm very concerned because this sandwich is delicious and I don't want to stop eating it.
And I feel like I haven't had Twilight Zone spread before, so, I mean, that could be good. No, it's terrifying. Anyway... he even comments on Shannon switching sides. Shannon's like, it's just business. And he's like, oh, that's what I like about you. Or I don't. Who cares? We're being canceled. Anyway, I have to go on a rant about how I want to create this society, and I want to get rid of all the useless cogs in our society. And that's what you are, Kandera. You're a useless cog in the wheel of society. You are a corporate drone. And that's when Kandera's like, you're still just a kid. That's rich. No matter how being of some use...
No matter how being of some use or
being
by someone,
okay.
That's a person's
purpose. Yeah, and he basically is like, having friends and friendship and community is a good thing. And he's like, no, it's not. I watched V for Vendetta, so I know about this stuff. So he explodes with power. He's like, don't patronize me! And,
Hashtag not your shield.
And then what's-his-name screams, Miss Mary, get out of here! So she runs away, and then he's like, oh, it's the girl with the explosive power! I'll get you out of here! And then guards show up, and she's like, oh no, a bunch of stuff will explode. I don't really know what happens. Basically, she gets really scared and explodes, and then, you know, it's a big dust cloud. Everyone's like, what happened? And next week will be the second-to-last chapter, probably.
We can only hope.
Oh, man, it was... Oof. This has been a series that every time it keeps going on, I'm just like, oh, just end. I can tell you're trying to just end.
Okay. One Piece.
Yes! Back to our recaps.
Chapter 772, Cabbage and Lomeo.
Well, before we get to that, we need to talk about One Piece in 2014.
Yes.
So, One Piece in 2014 was a tough one to kind of define, because the chapter that started the year had a lot going on. We were still in the middle of the Colosseum fights. I think we were kind of in the point of Rebecca being in the main Colosseum fight. Robin and Usopp were just sneaking into the Smile Factory facility to go take down Sugar. We hadn't actually gotten to Sabo even showing up yet. I think that happened like the week after this. So
it's weird to think, because it feels like more time has passed since then.
It feels like we should have had, like, I feel like that would be like, oh no, that was like a year and a half ago or something like that. But like, no, it was actually the start of this year. And when you think about it, One Piece also, I think, had a couple breaks during the year, but it does kind of add up. One Piece has been interesting this year. It's been good. It has been a good year, but it hasn't been great, I think is the best way to say it. I had expectations it would be better. And I think that's mostly just because we're getting to that big point now. Most of last year was primarily build up to what we're just starting to get now. And we got a lot of very cool things last year. We got the Law flashback. We got the Cryos flashback. We got Usopp beating Sugar twice.
Sugar.
Like, twice. we got a lot of stuff last year, but now we're getting into the climax of this. We're seeing these big fights happening. We're going to get Luffy versus Doflamingo. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff happening. There were some slow parts, and part of that's just because that's the nature of how One Piece builds its story, is it, you know, kind of acts this way. But I still think, you know, for even me being like, eh, I wasn't as happy with it as I am now, I feel like when I go back later on and read this arc and, you know, read it all in one burst, I feel like I'm going to enjoy it more. Because I felt like I have similar feelings I did when I first read the whole Water 7 CP9 arc week to week, where I was like, oh, I guess that was pretty cool. But then when I reread it again, I was like, no, that was fucking epic and awesome. And, you know, because One Piece has such a pace where a lot of things happen in one chapter, and, you know, you get a lot from week to week, and, you know, having that week gap can make things, you know, become feel disjointed. When you read it all one go, though, it becomes a lot more fluid and a lot more satisfying. Also, I'm at the point I'm playing the One Piece game on the 3DS, Romance Dawn, and, you know, it takes you through the whole storyline of One Piece, and I'm in Alabasta right now, and I'm like, God, I forgot how fucking awesome and epic those fights in Alabasta were, and I wish we got some fights like that. I'm really hoping on it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, all the great stuff that Usopp got to do in, like, such short bursts, like, just by pure luck, scaring Sugar into knocking her out, and then making that absurd shot, and shooting a bullet shaped like his freaked out face to freak her out again, and knock her out again.
And we also got a lot of fun in this. I mean, we got Senor Pink, who I think is probably the best character, was introduced in 2014.
We got all of
Bartolomeo. We got Pika and his
hashtag Bartolomeo first triad.
In his wacky, like, high pitched voice. There's some good stuff. Lao G and his fucking dying. There's some good shit this year. Romance Dawn does suck, though, for people who are talking about it in the chat. It's a really weird game. It's a good game if you like One Piece, but it's such a weird game. You run through hallways over and over again. That's the game.
Such is the curse of licensed games, basically.
Yeah.
So, this chapter opens first with Kairos continuing to fight against Diamante, and Diamante is causing all of the sunflowers in the field to wave back and forth, rippling the entire landscape, in fact. And Diamante says, oh, it's hard to stand for you, isn't it? You one-legged toy soldier. Ah, it all makes sense now, because you were Scarlet's husband, and thus the toy that was screaming and shrieking that day was you, and your Rebecca's father. And it's so perfect, because we're fated to fight, Kairos. They start to fight against each other. Kairos leaps in with his sword, but of course Diamante is wearing his steel cloak and is easily blocking it. Then, rather than striking back against Kairos, he launches out with his sword and whips it out towards Rebecca, and Kairos has to leap in the way and deflect it. And he's puffing for breath, and Rebecca says, Father, come on, I want to fight, and he keeps just trying to attack me. I'm doing nothing but weighing you down. And Diamante mocks her, but Kairos says, no, Rebecca, let me protect you this time to make up for Scarlet. I owe you that much. The fact that I taught you how to fight has been a source of regret to me and terrible shame. And now that I am human once more, I will never let you swing a sword again. Well, this is problematic. yeah. Yeah.
It definitely does not sound the best on the paper. I think what we're trying to get is what he's trying to suggest is, like, look, you weren't ever meant to be a warrior. You know, you were meant to have a more freedom to choose in your life. So I'm going to create that opportunity right now, even before, you know, this battle's done. I'm going to free you from that, you know, gladiatorial life that I lived. But in the same regard,
she's like asking Rebecca, let me help you, let me fight alongside you.
Rebecca should kind of have a choice in the matter. I mean, I guess you could say it's more of a parental thing than necessarily a guy telling a woman, don't stand back, I'll
handle
this.
Would be less problematic if she was a guy, honestly.
Yeah, if this were his son, then yeah, I think it might be a little bit different. Woman. Yeah, but it definitely does have some awkward tones to it.
Yeah.
But I still think she's going to have or get involved in this fight. I still think that's it. Also, I really like the way that Diamante's power is kind of like the field is literally rippling itself, like kind of moving. Like his cape is actually just a solid steel thing, but his powers make it like a cape.
You're feeling a bit higher on him now, because I yeah. haven't liked his powers for a long time.
Yeah, I'm seeing them here now. It looks a lot cooler. Also, he's such a douchey villain in this, I have to love it. He's just like, I can't wait to see what happens when you've lost your wife and daughter!
So then we cut up to Zoro on the second step, and of course they're like, oh my god, Lao Ji's been defeated! And Zoro says, I've heard that name before, in response to something? To Lao Ji's name? I don't know.
No, I think to the army. To the fucking... Yeah. Where's he? Where's he say it?
The Haposui army of Kano Kingdom.
So yeah.
He's recognizing, but that wasn't their name, whatever. So it's like, oh, well, I better keep that in mind. You know, they never know who might end up as an enemy.
Were they from Kano or are they from Wano? I thought they were from the Wano country, but I'm probably totally mistaken on that.
I mean,
obviously it says Kano here, so yeah. I mean, that is, but I guess I was just thinking they were from Wano because they had sort of like a old Asian kind of aesthetic to them, and that was kind of like the impression that we got of Wano was like this old samurai country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Wano was, yeah. So yeah, they're from the Kano Kingdom. Don Chinjiao's okay. group. So, Sai is tending to Don Chinjiao, and he's like, oh, don't die, grandfather! And so Baby Five says, I'm going to reserve two locations, honey! And he's like, locations? Honey? Yeah, you said you were going to marry her, remember? Come on, dude.
Ah, fuck. Oops.
And Baby Five says, yes, for our wedding and the funeral. He's like, both Don Chinjiao and Sai are like, I'm not dead yet.
What the fuck? Come on.
I don't like that, though. Just like, yeah, I'll get ready for the funeral. Then we cut to further up to where Gladius is fighting with Cavendish. It seems that... Oh, okay, that's what's happening. Right. So, pardon me, Gladius uses his bursting power to actually cause the entire ground to swell up and prepares to have it explode. And so as this is happening, Cavendish runs back to Bartolomeo and he's like, Bartolomeo, the ground's going to explode. Let me into your barrier. Bartolomeo's like, eh, no thanks. That puts me and Miss Robin at risk. And then the enemies might get in. He's like, come on! So the ground entirely erupts after one of the soldiers is like, Sir Gladius, we're in danger too. Oh no, don't worry about it. You're elite troops, right? What? What? Oh. Oh no. And then just, boom. Yep, you don't give a shit. Of course you don't. But luckily Cavendish was able to get inside of Bartolomeo's barrier, to which Bartolomeo says, yeah, it looks like you would have died, yeah. So Cavendish kicks him in the face. That's a high goddamn kick, too.
Yeah, he's got some distance on that. Bartolomeo's not a short guy.
So they start to argue back and forth for a bit, bickering. And then he looks up. Bartolomeo looks up and he's like, oh, what about Miss Robin? Oh, there she is, and she's climbing up along her own arms, which she's making into steps up the mountainside. And she's like, ah, Rebecca, I'm sorry for forcing you to go ahead alone. I'm going to catch up with you now. And so they head up. Gladius spots Robin and tries to take a shot at her, but, well, Bartolomeo still has his barrier, and he just, like, stretches out a long arm of it in order to deflect them, and Gladius gets in the way. So Robin's like, ah, rooster, and she winks at him. Thanks. And Bartolomeo goes, she winked at me. I'm not worthy. And his fandom starts to get a little bit creepy. And she's like, oh, did that wink mean, nice job, rooster, I might just make you my slave after all.
Ugh. Hey, it's what fanboys do, Nick.
That's true, man. Well, some fanboys.
Yeah.
Cavendish leaps in to attack Gladius now that he's been distracted. But before he can reach him, Bartolomeo is so inspired by Robin's wink that he just sends his barrier charging forward with a barrier bull's ability. It just sent it forth in this huge wave, and he thinks to himself, Miss Robin, a wink from you is enough to make any man risk his life. And Cabbage is like, I'm over here too! And it's just like bulldozing everybody over. Sorry, Cabbage! I can't stop now!
It's like that, like, why are you doing this? I'm over here, I can't stop. Why not? I'm too pumped up! That doesn't make sense!
So he topples all of them over, And Dellinger looks off in the distance, like, "Oh, hey, Gladius, what are you doing? We're about to wrap up over here." And so Gladius says, "Well, come up over here then, because Miss Nico Robin is on her way upward." And he's like, "All right, you got it." But the boxer guy, whose name I still don't remember, stops him with one of his super long arms. And so Dellinger says, "Ah, I figured something was up with those bones protruding from your shoulders. Well, I guess you're from the Long Arms tribe then. Well, I already put one hole in your stomach, so just die already." And he says something, which I guess is supposed to make him seem badass, but whatever. He says something like, "There is no such thing as a solitary victory." Whatever. Then
Edo? Is that his name?
What?
Edo? Ido?
I don't know.
I feel like it's something along those lines. Actually, you know what? You're pooping on it, but I do actually like his... Not that I care much about him as a character, but I like his notion that he's just like, "It's not about me beating you. I'm just trying to buy some time, because we're all in this together. There's no such thing as a solitary victory." So he's like, "I don't even really care about beating you. I'll play you because it's our win that I'm looking into."
So Dellinger laughs at him and tears his cap off.
Ideal! Holy shit, Nick! I was really close on that!
Dellinger rips his hat off and then bares his teeth, which all pop out into giant fangs, and he says, "So you're going to triumph through sheer sacrifice. That's what trash does. The strong have no need for honor." And he chomps into what is his name?
Ideo. I don't know.
How do you spell it?
I-D-E-O.
Ideo.
Ideo.
Okay. So, but Dellinger chomps into him and then, like, throws him off of the little spike that they're on and says, "I'm no ordinary human either. Don't play games with fighting fish blood." Which, we kind of already knew that about him before, right?
I don't think it was ever actually deliberately said. I think that's what people have been telling us, that they were theorizing because of his horns. But yeah, he is a fighting fishman.
So he heads up to the third step and he's like, "Gladius, I'm here. Where are you?" And Gladius is like, "No, Dellinger, you need to stay down. Don't come up. This one is really bad news." And he's like, "Oh, come on. What could possibly be bad news for the both of them?" And Cavendish is fallen unconscious and his demonic self has taken over. And he just basically cuts Dellinger down immediately. And...
aww.
Then Bartomeu is like, "What's this? What's going on? Hey, there's some really freaky guy on the other side of my barrier."
I gotta love how Bartomeu is handling this whole situation. Not like, "Oh my god, that's terrifying." He's like, "Hey, what's that weird dude doing on the other side of my barrier?"
Yeah, his fangs kind of make him look like a fish man too.
Yeah, but I think he's just supposed to
No, I think he's just like punk and have sharpened them or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the chapter. Looks like another general got taken down, though. So
yes, well, very likely. How'd you feel about it, Nick?
I like Bartolomeo's antics.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about really all that I really liked about the chapter. So
I definitely did enjoy some more Bartolomeo. I'm a bit half and half on the way this one ends. I do like that Cavendish, you know, is seemingly the one defeating Dellinger, because we actually had been told this before. I'd forgotten it, but you know, we do know that Cavendish has this weird side to him where he just kind of loses track of everything and he's kind of like a one-hit wonder.
Right.
And then immediately afterwards he goes to sleep. So presumably he's done now. Like, he'll just pass out and fall asleep from here on in. And then I guess that sets up that it'll be Bartolomeo against Gladius. I don't know what Robin's off to do. I don't know if she'll actually get up there and get involved in the fight against Diamante or not. That'd be kind of cool, because he's a pretty high-level guy, so it'd be cool to see her go up against him. But I do like this. Again, we're kind of at a point where the people who are beating these guys... It's a shame we're not getting... Or I guess what I'm trying to say, it's a shame we're not getting a more prolonged fight. Because, again, like, going through these fights in Alabasta and, you know, Water 7, I was like, oh, God, those long back-and-forth fights are, like, the fucking pinnacle of what I enjoyed on this series. But it's still cool what we're getting, and I feel like the big fights we're going to get, like Frankie and Senor Pink, we are going to get those. So those are still something to look forward to.
Mm. Okay, and then Seven Deadly Sins?
Yes, so real quick, Seven Deadly Sins this year started off basically starting the arc that we were in the entire year. It was Elizabeth got captured, and the chapter ended with Diana throwing Bon and Melodious towards the kingdom to go rescue her. And that's pretty much the entire arc we spent the rest of the year on, with Melodious fighting Hendrickson and all that. And I can't say Seven Deadly Sins was bad. It's just had Seven Deadly Sins is unspectacular throughout the year. The arc was okay. It had a couple kind of cool points to it, but it was definitely nothing very memorable. And I just don't think that Seven Deadly Sins quite yet has hit its peak potential, per se. Last week, Hendrickson revealed that he was still alive, and with the mysterious help of Dreyfus, which doesn't make sense, like, going back that one chapter to the start of the year, I was like, why is Dreyfus, like, never hinted at being a fucking demon at all? Why is he always, like, the bitch entering, like, answering to all of Hendrickson's calls? Like a fucking coward. But, anyway, Hendrickson calls the demons, that's where the chapter starts off, he's unleashing this spell, and, all the demons start popping out, this big power blast goes out, and Hendrickson's like, I will revive the demon race! Oh! And he, like, disappears into this light. And, then Dreyfus shows up, and Hendrickson is still alive, but all of the demon stuff has been removed from him. Only the ashen parts are completely disposed of, is what Dreyfus says. And he says, I'm not even sure if I'd have been able to handle it. Good job, the ritual's over. And as a reward for your helpfulness, I won't kill you. That's what this man wishes as well. So go and do whatever the fuck you want. And, you know, that's when Henderson's like, oh, you're not Dreyfus at all. But then we cut away to a bunch of mysterious demons. We then see their forms, and one of them has boobies, because she's the first one on the page. You're like, oh, okay, boobies. And then there's, like, another girl, and there's a dude in, like, a cloak, but his head's turned away from the camera. And there's a guy with, like, a really long sword, and there's, like, a forearm giant guy with a bag over his head. And there's a night guy, and what looks like a girl wrapped in tentacles. And then there's, like, a big, like, ball of masks. I don't know what the fuck that is. It's a thing. And then there's a really small guy who was not in the foreground at all, so I immediately called he was going to be related to Melodius and going to be the main villain in this. And I'll spoil Nick a couple pages from now. It turns out he's the biggest, baddest of them all.
Okay.
So we actually see him, and he looks a lot like Melodius. And actually seeing him in this page, I never realized how this guy's artwork fucking looks like Toriyama's. Because his character looks pulled fucking straight out of Dragon Ball Z. He looks so much like Goku, it's disturbing. Like a young Goku. It's crazy. But anyway, the demons are revived, and one demon says, if I recall correctly, Edinburgh Hill should be just to the east. Let's go. So all the demons fly off.
That's are, you sure are you sure it's not Edinburgh?
It could be.
Mm.
They're going to a hill to kill things, I assume.
Okay. All right, then.
So, Toriko!
What happened?
Nick, do you want me to get this chapter real quick for you? I'm just gonna play a Rocky montage.
Okay.
Just anyone, pick your movie. A lot of people prefer four. There's no easy. There's no easy way out. That was the chapter this week. That's all that Toriko happened. It's a montage.
Even Zebra's training with them. He's like, you said you weren't going to train.
To be fair, he's just eating the bugs at first. He's even still like, this is still stupid, I'm just going to eat. And then the guy's like, no, it'll be much tastier if you train with them. He's like,
what, really?
Lame!
What, really? Yes. Ba-da-da! Da-da-da!
It's, oh, man. Anyway, Toriko
with, like, more monkeys. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
I didn't mention Toriko 2014. The way it started was basically the time skip. Essentially, this year started with the time skip.
I do recall that, actually.
So, in that year, we got the Billion Bird arc.
Mm-hmm.
We got everything revolving the Air arc.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten a very, what seems like a very healthy dose of this Pear arc. Toriko needs to slow the fuck down. There's been no time for any of these things.
It needs, like, stuff to actually happen, as opposed to stuff to happen quickly.
Mm-hmm. Or it needs things with a purpose, as opposed to things that are just going to be kind of cool as a cliffhanger.
Right. Okay, let's see here. So we'll just go past that.
Yep.
World Trigger.
Ah, World Trigger. All right, so World Trigger. There was no World Trigger this chapter this week, unfortunately. But World Trigger in 2014 started with... Essentially, that was when the new rabbit models were revealed as enemies for the characters. They showed off that these new rabbit models were super strong and everything like that. So essentially, the entire year has been that invasion arc. I mean, there was a little bit of the invasion before that, but the grand majority of the invasion took place this year and ended within this year. And, I mean, unless this is your first time listening to Weekly, I think you would be aware of that World Trigger was absolutely on fire this year.
Yeah. World Trigger was the best manga.
Yeah, this year. There's no reason to hide it. Best manga of the year was definitely World Trigger.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
As much as we have liked One Piece consistently, nowhere to the level that World Trigger has been, because it was just at the top almost every week.
Mm-hmm. It did a lot of incredible things. It did phenomenal battles. It had great action pieces. It had absolutely incredible character development moments. It made you care about this huge cast of characters. It had an enemy antagonist group who weren't made to look like incompetent idiots. They were all made to seem intimidating and devil, and because of that, the hero's success was all that much more rewarding.
And they had their own motivations within the group as well.
They had a great climax, a great end to everything as well, a great follow-up, too, with Osamu and the press conference. It was a great year.
And we've gotten stuff that moves on toward the future and stuff, too. So
yeah, a lot of foreshadowing has been placed into this and stuff to pay off later. So it can't be said. World Trigger, absolutely phenomenal this year. I'm absolutely cool with the fact that there's no World Trigger chapter this week, because I'm like, hey, dude, you get some fucking rest. You did half this year with a broken hand and sickness, so yeah, you take a rest, because you absolutely delivered. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, if you don't read World Trigger yet...
Do so.
you absolutely owe it to yourself to do so.
Okay. So that wraps up all the stuff that we're, I guess, currently doing, so let's do the stuff that wrapped up this year.
Yes, so... We had two series that came in Jump.
It was about Ninja or... we don't need to talk about that.
Oh, shit, yeah, I completely forgot about Naruto. Because it wasn't actually in the recap itself. Oh, alright, well, Naruto at the start of the year
I'm glad I brought that up.
Yeah, I completely forgot to do Naruto. The only two series I was thinking was All You Need Is Kill and Stell Symphony, but yeah, we did forget to talk about Naruto. Naruto at the beginning of the year was Madara was absorbing all the tail beasts, including Kurama.
Oh my god. So all that stuff where it went downhill, all happened in one chapter, didn't it? Jeez.
Basically, this year started with them sort of building to the... Because the Naruto and Sasuke hadn't gotten their sage powers yet, so we were kind of just getting that high point of the fight between Madara and Naruto-Sasuke. And then we got all the stuff with Madara, or Kaguya, which was, you know, we all know.
What a terrible final year they had then, jeez.
And then, you know, finally we got the Sasuke-Naruto fight, and then our conclusion. But yeah, when you look back on it, it was sort of the tail end of the Madara fight. And then all the Kaguya stuff.
That's awful.
That's what took the year. So, unfortunately, not a very good final year for Naruto at all.
We already discussed the conclusion of Naruto in great detail all throughout November. So, yeah. You don't need to talk too much more about it, but...
Yeah.
That's so bad.
But, no, we...
It felt like it took longer for that to happen, but geez, all on that list...
Do you remember last year when I told you the start of 2013 was fucking Neji being killed, and you were like, that's all that happened this year?
Oh, God. And now we've just got to do that with Bleach. That's it?
That's all that fucking... Mask and Mask on? So, this year we had two series that started in Jump and ended in Jump within the same year. Right. And those would be All You Need Is Kill and Stealth Symphony.
Well, All You Need Is Kill was a complete story, mm-hmm. and it was quite good. I think that we both quite enjoyed it.
Yep.
We also really liked having our weekly conversations on it while it was running.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also went and we saw The Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
Which was also pretty good, although I was trying very hard to be negative on it when I discussed it with you guys on... Oh, crap, the title is escaping me. Chris.
Exposition Dump.
Exposition Dump.
Yes. Still a good movie, though. If you have not seen Edge of Tomorrow, I recommend it. It's a very good movie.
I ended up not seeing very many movies this year, so it's among my one of the favorites that I saw. So
by default.
Mostly by default. I did definitely see some terrible movies this year.
It was weird, because one of the email recaps we got, someone had mentioned how they really liked DJ Mimic as, like, the character WMR created, and I was like, I can't even recall. Like,
oh,
I know,
yeah,
there was
the Mimic, and we made him DJ Mimic.
I don't remember what
the
character was, though.
I do remember us doing that.
Yeah, like, I know there's an episode called DJ Mimic, too, and I'm just like, I forget what the gag was.
How did that come up? It's like a few weeks ago when Jeff told us, like, I think that my favorite joke is when you talked about Minato and Kushina's horrible sex life, and we were like, that was like a year and a half ago, dude.
Oh, man.
It's because we do this every week, so we don't remember the stuff as much as you guys do, I guess.
When I'm dropping gold all the time, it's hard to miss a few nuggets.
Well, we're just doing this stuff off the top of our heads, too.
Yeah. We have, like, one of those characters per series. Like, fucking Assy was the same thing, too. It was just, like, we made one comment on the way he spoke, and it just became this wacky character for a while.
And then he died, and we were like, damn it. At least we got two fights out of him.
But yeah, All You Need Is Kill, I think, was very good. Stealth Symphony.
It was not as good.
No, it had a great ending, if only because it was like, fuck it, I'm doing everything!
That's how you cancel a series early. That was a freaking amazing, just hard-hitting conclusion. It's like, yeah, this guy who we set up is going to kill the main character. Yeah, he did. He cut his head off. He's dead now.
And he had to do it because he was going fucking bonkers.
We illustrated it by showing the graffiti in his room where he just wrote the same thing over and over again. Also,
pleased?
All the letters he sent home were to dead people.
Oh, God. Such a disturbing end to that series, if you actually looked into it.
It just took too long to get going, because I think that if it had, like, actually started off more compelling, and then gone the way that it was supposed to, then we would have probably really started to enjoy it.
So. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
I had some people talk to me, like, oh, you know, you can't just, like, judge a series as early on as you do some of these things. You know, World Trigger got better, and I was like, yeah. That's the exception that proves the rule, though. It's really hard to have a series get better after it starts off at a low point. That's why manga series get judged by, like, the first 8 weeks, and that's it.
Yeah.
Gotta have a strong beginning. So,
we also had the Jumpstart series, just if you wanted to mention them real quick.
We, of course, talked about Gakuhote.
Gakuhote.
We also had
Takujo no Agehe.
Which you both liked, but yes. Didn't like as much as Gakuhote, so we were fine with that getting picked up instead.
Yeah, had Gakuhote not been there, I think it would have been great to have gotten it. But with it, I'm fine with it not being there. But it is still a funnier series that belied its weird fan service-y attitude.
Unlike E-Robot, which was just terrible.
A lot of people wanted that to win, too.
Well,
a lot of people
all.
Wanted it to win solely so we'd have to read it.
Well,
and those are bad,
fuck
bad
all
people.
Of you, then. I get to be happy instead, and we get to make Phoenix Wright jokes. Instead of, and then she does something stupid and sexual, and fuck all of you for making me read this.
And then her boobs get really big, and they hit something.
And then they have an orgy, because something goes wrong again.
There was also Judo's this year.
So bland.
Hi-Fi Cluster, which is technically still going.
And then Sporting Cell, which we wanted to win, but we understood why it wasn't picked up.
Because niche. Finally, there was Eld Alive, which,
which
beyond
we barely remember.
Beyond even Katakeo, Gene Kamikaze, whatever the fuck.
Kamikaze Kaizen.
I still don't remember anything about Eld Alive. He has a thing in there, him, and... He also has an alien.
It was like you had one chapter to remember, and you were like,
I can't fucking comprehend what's happening here.
It's like there was an alien, Chris, and it was like attached to him, and then there was the girl that he really liked, but she was just like super cold Sundare, man.
I know, but I just can't get it. I don't know why. I might be having a stroke.
Since you started reading the manga until now.
Like, no, just when I'm reading Eld Alive, I start having a stroke.
So I think that covers everything?
Yeah, that's it. That's 2014. That's our thoughts of a 2014 year in review of manga.
Before we get into the contests stuff, mm-hmm. I have this one email that I'd like to read that is regarding not the whole year, but just a recent event. And I like this because it's a big Boss Man reference. It comes from Dante Griffith, which is a sympathy card for Natsu's father passing. It is with deep regrets and tears that are soaked, I'm sorry to hear that your dad croaked. He lived a full life inside your belly, soon to be digested in that Nologia's belly. If I had a son as lame as you, I would fish frack Nologia to blast me too. Be brave and strong, get your life on track. The old dragon is dead just like Unohana, and they're never coming back. Ace reference Destiny 012. Good job.
Very good, Nick. So yes, we had a contest. We wanted you guys to send in your thoughts on what you thought of Weekly Manga Recap and all the manga of 2014, and a lot of people sent in some great great responses. I was really curious to kind of see where you guys thought of manga this year, and also what you thought of WMR. And a lot of people really thought this was or 2014 was a good year for us. It was great to kind of hear the feedback. You know, there's some stuff that we can take in, try to do this year. I said,
oh, a lot cat, of people want stop digging the litter box.
Wanted to see more guests. That's something we can definitely do. We'll look into. A lot of people enjoyed the fact that we were taking series slower. But I am giving away a winner to this. That person will be getting the digital copies of World Trigger. It's going to have to wait, unfortunately, just like a week or two. I have to get paid again, and then I can get it to you. Unfortunately, the money's a little tight at the start of the month here. But I don't know if you want me to read it or if you want to read it, or I don't know who you think has a better...
I can do the voice if...
I don't know who you think has a better Enzo Amore.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard yours. I can give it a shot. Let's see. All right.
I do a good Staten Island, though.
I'll start it off, and then if you feel like you need to jump in, go right ahead, okay?
All right, go for it.
Hello, I am Michael Williams, a.k.a. the Axe-Tool Man 3. I'm sorry. The one Axe-Tool Man 3, a.k.a. North Grizzly, longtime fan of WMR, and you can't teach that. It is an honor to make contact with Rolo T, who's not only funny as hell, but a real G, and you can't teach that. And why Ruler of Time, who's as hot-blooded as lava, and you can't teach that. Bada-boom, realest podcast on iTunes. Also, I'd like to make a special shout-out to Josh. Man, you like those fangirls who think Sasuke is anything other than an emo git who just needs their love. Your S-A-W-F-T soft?
You happy, Nick?
I don't know, did you like it?
Yeah, it was okay.
I'm not from.
I feel. So. Well, they're more so Staten Island, I think.
I don't know the difference. That's how, like, not New York I am, though.
Oh, you gotta get in there. You gotta start doing your Andrew Dice Clay impersonation. Oh!
Doesn't sound like that, though.
No, he doesn't, but that's what I just think everyone from Staten Island sounds like, because that's what Quinn from Impractical Joker sounds like.
I thought they were supposed to be, like, Queens. I know Big Cass is supposed to be from Queens.
I know Carmella is supposed to be from Staten Island, and I know Enzo. I feel so fucking bad for this planet right now. He hates wrestling. We're talking about Farm League wrestling. Enzo, I know, was originally auditioned for Jersey Shore. Like, that's where this whole character comes from. So I think he's supposed to be from Staten Island.
Oh,
anyway.
We've
so,
excluded it so much of our life. We're not making.
We did. I'm not going to read all
NXT references. This is great.
This one's almost picked solely just because it managed to appeal to our manga side and wrestling side.
It's not just the introduction, because
that's the thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but I will read the way that kind of this caught my attention is that Michael Williams here, aka the One Axe Two Man Three, which is to get a different name because that's annoying.
He also says he's North Grizzly. There you go.
Alright, well, he's in the chat room as the One Axe Two Man Three, so...
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. But anyway, he goes to recap the last year of manga by comparing every manga to a wrestler.
And some of these are fucking spot on.
The only one that I absolutely just love, though, is Hi-Fi Cluster's Mark Henry. And that is it. I was like, yeah, that feels about right. It's just kind of there.
He doesn't explain it. Just like, yeah. I love the one that's, but some of the other just great. It's like, you know, Toriko is like Dolph Ziggler. It can be great, but you're moving too fast. Slow the fuck down. Yeah. Good stuff. Royal Trigger, yeah. Sami Zayn, this was your year. Lots of continuation, completion, and follow. The best event. Best event World Trigger this series is bound for greatness.
Yeah, they are good with Gakuya Hotaius, Finn Balor, you know, a newer star, but proving himself dark, kind of creepy and creative, so. Yeah, I agree with it.
What this means is the World Trigger and Gakuya Hotaius are not going to go anywhere because Vince McMahon hates them for just being on NXT and being good.
We're getting really meta now. But no, I really appreciate everyone who sent something in, guys. I thought that was great. Also, really quick, I just want to take a quick second here to give a quick mention, shout-out to King O'Green 2.0, Anime Guy 1101, and Last Chaos. Those are three people who have given us reviews on iTunes. And all I can say, guys, I really appreciate that. I know it sounds like I'm fucking one of those YouTube people who are just like, subscribe, and fucking whatever the other thing you do on YouTube is. And it sounds annoying, I'm sure, to you guys, but just understand that that stuff, the writing the reviews and rating the podcast, do an immense amount to help what we're going to be able to do with Weekly Manga Recap, to help it reach more people and to help it make a better show. So if you have a moment, and I know it doesn't take that long, if you can go on, give a 5-star rating, give it a review, whatever you can do, greatly appreciate it.
Okay. All right. So I think that we're done now. Not sure.
Yeah,
there was a lot of extra stuff that I have to keep track of this episode, so oof.
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, join us next week, everybody, for our discussion on Real, the wheelchair basketball manga by the author of Slam Dunk. But, you know, just in general, thanks for joining us for our recording. We record the show on twitch.tv/RoloT, usually Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up. For example, if we have really bad problems with Skype fucking us over. So to stay updated on that kind of stuff, just follow us on Twitter. He is at RoloT, and I am at YRoller of Time, and we'll let you know when we're going to begin the broadcast. Also, of course, be sure to send us your criticism, questions, and suggestions in the comments section, or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Check out all of the different ways you can now listen to the show. iTunes, Podcast Garden, ChannelAwesome.com. And even just Chris's blip.tv/HilariousProductions.
Thank you.
And special thanks to Steve Manor Takarash. You can check out his work at NarokFanboy.DeviantArt.com and iDropBoobs.Tumblr.com. And additionally, special thanks to The Infamous Planet, who makes visual editions of our podcast, even though we keep on making references that he has to look up because he is that dedicated to his work. So thank you so much, man. Thank you for all the stuff that you've done and whatever you decide to do in the future. But yeah, that's it.
I guess I should reiterate here. Normally this is where we put a joke, but I do want to reiterate because some people have mentioned, like, hey, trying to get downloads of Weekly Manga Recap, but I don't have iTunes. Where can I get that? Weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. So go grab it there. New episodes will go up pretty much like the day after, or, you know, a day later than when it's finished recording. So go grab them there. And, yeah, that's it. Any wacky thoughts you want to go out on, Nick? Oh, good lord. That was meaty.
I'm sorry. It was just like, I felt it coming up, but I was like, this is going to be such a perfect time. Yes.
You're like, I've been holding this in for 2.5 hours.